Welcome to the Breaking Up with Yo-Yo Dieting podcast. I'm your host, Amber McKenzie. I'm an author, speaker, and former yo-yo dieter turned successful weight maintainer, and I get to live in a body I love. Each week, I'll share stories, practical strategies, and have inspiring conversations with guests to help you get and keep the body you dream of. Now let's find out how to break up with yo-yo dieting and fall in love with yourself.
Love yourselves, really, really tap into self-compassion and know that you're doing your best wherever you are.
This podcast is not meant to diagnose, treat, prevent, or cure any medical or mental health condition. Please check with your healthcare professional before making changes to your diet or exercise program.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. All right. I'm always excited to bring on guests. And today I'm extra excited again. I have Lindsay, and I heard this woman speak last year at the Bliss Project, where I was at Lori Harder's event. And if you don't know who Lori Harder is, go check out episode 63 of the podcast, where I have Lori Harder sharing her story and talking actually about the Bliss Project, where I heard Lindsay. So if you like this podcast, make sure you go check out episode 63. Anyway, we have Lindsay, and Lindsay is an incredible speaker. She is a transformational expert and coach, and actually, I saw her, and she spoke at the beginning of a class. She was teaching yoga, and then she spoke the way through it, and not only does she speak, and is she a transformational coach and teaches yoga, what she actually has this really unique ability to do is just bring herself there and speak to your soul by being her in this really loving, gentle, playful kind of way. And I don't even know how to describe her, but that's why I want her on, because I want you to experience Lindsay for all that she is. She's also a writer. She is a mom of four children. And she lives in the jungle. She's from corporate and in the jungle. We're going to hear more about that. So welcome to the podcast, Lindsay.
Thank you, Amber. I'm so, so thrilled and honored to be here. And I loved connecting with you at Bliss and then again in person this summer. And I'm really, really excited and honored to be able to connect with your crew and share whatever I can in this amazing conversation.
Perfect. So we're going to dive into your story. But before I do that, I have a rapid fire. And it requires 1 to 2 words or short sentences. How do you feel about going through the rapid fire?
I love it. This sounds like fun.
All right, let's do it. So they're all kind of like food-ish related or body and or weight or shape related. So it's, 1 to 2 words or a short sentence, and we can circle back later if we need to, okay?
Sure.
All right, well, the first question isn't food related, but it's where are you from? Where do you live now?
I'm from Sault Ste. Marie in Northern Ontario, and I live now in Costa Rica on the ocean in the jungle.
Holy. Do you ever get food cravings? And if so, how do you manage them?
Oh, yes. I have to say, yes, I do. And I honor them. Mm. We can talk more about that later. That's my 2 words.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's the hard part, right? Do you call food, like a food that would be a deviation from your typical way of eating? Would you call that like food, a treat meal, a cheat meal? How would you refer to that?
It depends. If it's like McDonald's or something that's like just, I would call it toxic and I would probably not eat it. If it was what I was referring to earlier, like a dark chocolate or something, a dessert, I eat it regularly and I would call it pleasure.
I love that. And so maybe we'll call it like that pleasure then. How would that fit into your overall way of eating?
I eat entirely intuitively and I developed the deepest relationship to my body and physical, mental, emotional, spiritual realms. And so over the years, what I've done is observed how certain things make me feel and then choose whether or not to continue to consume them. And that applies to food, movement, people, thought patterns, where I live, how I live. And so it's a refinement process based on a deepest connection to my inner self and discernment about the impact of the choices I make.
That was such a good answer. And I'm going to come back to, I'm sure, something in there. Oh, man. Who has been the most influential person to your health and wellness journey?
Oh, that's such a good question. I would have to say for me, it's been the practice of yoga. And in that, I could name multiple different key teachers I've had. Getting onto the yogic journey has allowed me to create that connection that I just talked about to food, to movement. So if I had to say like one person, my very first major yoga teacher was a teacher called Michael Siddall in Toronto. And his ability to bring humor and playfulness and the depth of his excellence as a teacher from alignment, from philosophy, and from the practice of yoga, he was my first catalyst to really hook me into the practice of yoga. So I would name him as being a game-changing influence in my life.
He sounds like a game changer, that's for sure.
Yeah.
What's one thing you think of when you hear the word scale?
Get rid of it.
What's your favorite way to engage in self-care?
Again, listening is important to me, listening to what my body is asking for. And for me, rest has historically been challenging for me. So I actually have to put a little discipline around rest, which might sound insane, but that's my truth.
I get that. And I relate to that. What's your favorite, what's one thing you think of when you hear the word self-love?
The most important thing.
And what has been one tip or key that has been important to you when it comes to just your overall body weight and or shape management and how you live in your body?
Look for what you love. What we focus on.
Look for what you love.
Look for what you love about yourself, about your body, about what your body is capable of doing as opposed to what it looks like. Again, I could talk for the whole thing of just about that topic, but looking for what's working versus, I think historically I for sure and many people were looking for what's wrong, the flaws, where I could be better, what I don't like. And definitely having babies for me was a catalyst to see my body not in terms of how I could conquer it or dominate it or be so hard on the little pieces and pockets that I don't love, and instead seeing my body as literally a vehicle for miracles to happen. In that case, specifically having babies, but it could be running a marathon, doing certain postures with your yoga practice, or just getting you from point to point in your journey of your highest calling in the world, whatever your work is in the world, seeing your body as really like a vessel or a vehicle for miracles and what it is doing, how it performs. So again, instead of going to a yoga class and looking in the mirror at like, oh, my thighs are a little chubby, or I've got like pudge under my arms or whatever, instead literally focusing on, oh my gosh, I just got my leg a little bit further up my arm than I could last week. Or, oh my gosh, I just got into a headstand. Look at how strong I am. Look what my body can do for me. So looking more at the functional and the miraculous nature of what our bodies are doing versus, again, what's wrong with them, how they look, how they're not, if you have an injury, being mad at your body for how it's not serving you, as opposed to celebrating all the ways, like the fact that we can even breathe is a miracle. If you really think about it, that our hearts are beating is a miracle. And like really focusing on the miracle of our bodies, for me is game changing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You just talked about so much stuff that's important in the celebration of our bodies and looking at it as functional, looking at like what we want versus what we don't want. And I know this is where you're at now. And a lot of the listeners, you know, might be listening because they don't have that. They're not at that place. They have no vision on like what even it is you are talking about. They're like, no, I'm the person that goes to yoga and looks in the mirror at my pudge. I'm not the one that's looking in the mirror at my progress.
Yes.
And so can you take us back to before you were with this person, and maybe you were always somewhat of this person, but I know you told me about a little bit of the, your story wasn't always this way. So can you take us back a bit to where you started?
I'm giggling because when you're like, maybe you were always this person. Oh, let's get real. Let's get raw. Okay. So my story started out that I was a fat kid by all accounts. I was like the kid in the neighborhood that everybody called fat. And I love to eat. Now I would call myself a tantrika. Like the pleasure of food for me is second to none. I love to eat. And so that started out as a child. And, in hindsight, and I'm raising my kids very differently, I probably in the 80s, you were allowed to sit and watch TV for like 6 hours a day. And, you know, like chips were allowed as a snack and fruit roll-ups were considered a fruit. So there was just less, I think, awareness about sugar and health and all the things. And I was a super introverted kid. So I was like that chubby little nerdy kid reading in the corner all the time. That was me. And so I was just like super quiet. I wasn't super physically active or any of those things. And when I was 10, I will never forget this. I went to go for my yearly appointment at the doctor, and my doctor looked at me and he said, "You're fat. You need to lose 20 pounds. And I think you should go to Weight Watchers." And I was 10. I was a 10-year-old prepubescent little girl. And that had an impact, I can just say.
Yeah, what was that like for that 10-year-old girl?
Yeah, that was, in hindsight, like I was a bit jarred, but I couldn't have articulated at the time the impact it had, but it actually set me on a, I'm not blaming just him, I'm just saying it was a moment in time where I got on a different trajectory, and it was all, I would say, a complex mixture of variables. So I sprouted, I got taller. I remember the moment I went into grade six, and my parents signed us up for the swim team because we had kind of finished all the levels, and they were like, "Well, you should just go join the swim team," which ended up being such a gift because I got into fitness via that, but it was more from a place of a social time. And I actually love now, I would say, the meditative nature of swimming. It kept my mind really quiet and calm. And I had a lot of anxiety growing up. I was like chronic anxiety. And so finding swimming for me was game changing. And then at the same time, I kind of came out of my shell socially and all of those things fell into place. But I did have by nature, and I'm sure many of your listeners can relate to this, part and parcel with anxiety came extreme perfectionism, and not in the good way that you're like, "Oh, I'm just, you know, I'm a perfectionist. I like to do a really good job." I'm talking about like the paralyzing perfectionism, the like toxic perfectionism of overdoing everything for fear of failure or for fear of lack of control. And so I applied that not only in academics, but also in my body and my exercise. So over the years, I developed the opposite, which was like, I would say, very disordered eating habits, very restrictive. Like I was only allowed to eat from a very narrow range of foods. I started getting into distance running and boot camps and like obsessive about running to the point where I couldn't take a day off. Like I would feel like a failure. Like I would feel literally depressed for the entire day. And my mind would spend the whole day feeling guilty about not running. And so that when I say like perfectionistic, it was very toxic for me, like trying to be perfect at all of it. And I my weight did get to like, I was a lean kind of healthy looking weight. I was never extremely anorexic. I was just borderline. I would say I was like flirting with eating disorders is what I would say. And so that again was just again a representation, I think, of where I was at overall in my self-development at the time. And then I had babies, and I have to say that was two things happened. I found yoga when I was in my early 20s, and then I had babies. And having babies, I think, was very interesting for me because I gained 45 to 50 pounds with each baby, and I had 4 and 6 years. So imagine gaining and losing, and then I lost it all between each baby. So in the course of 6 years, I gained and lost 45 to 50 pounds 4 times in 6 years. So that was interesting. And,
oh my gosh, yeah.
And all the ways your body changes when you have babies and you're nursing and all the things. But what I was able to do, because I was doing also at the same time, as much as I overachieve in all the other areas, I'm also very committed to personal growth and personal development, which has luckily freed me from the shackles of all the other old patterns. But what I was able to do was to evolve my relationship to my body, from the humility of like, you just can't control your body when you're pregnant, and talking about food cravings, I will speak to that again more right now. I had such a profound experience of, and at this point I'd been doing yoga for at least 10 years. And so I had a very intimate distance running, et cetera. I had a very intimate relationship with my body at this point. I wasn't detached from it. And then having a baby, you have no choice but to be aware of your body because it's doing the weirdest things like all the time. You know, your boobs get massive in the first 2 weeks and then you feel sick. You want to throw up all the time for a while. And then you all of a sudden this little alien thing is moving in your stomach and you get like fat deposits in the most random places. You're like, why do my arms need to get fat when I have a baby? I don't understand. What does that have to do with anything? So that was a very interesting journey about self-love. But the most interesting thing to me was the food cravings. And so with my first baby and all the girls, I have three girls and one boy, I couldn't even look at meat. I had like it was like the most random thing. I was craving like cheese bread toasted with as much butter as you could possibly imagine getting on there. And my body just was like screaming at me for certain things. And so I decided to just listen to my body. And I think in hindsight, I think I was quite lean and I think my body needed to fatten up a little bit to like get the hormones happening that needed to happen. And likewise, I couldn't lose the weight until I was done nursing. And it was like, I would cling to this last 5 or 10 pounds, no matter how many boot camps I went to, no matter how clean my eating was, until the minute I stopped nursing, and then it would just melt away. So I'm convinced that my body was self-regulating to what
it needed like it, hey?
To be for the, and that was where my humility came into place, because literally I could work out like a crazy woman and those last 5 to 10 pounds would go nowhere. And likewise, I would change nothing. And as soon as that physiological shift had happened, it would just go away. And then on the flip side, when I was pregnant with my son, I had these insane cravings for meat, which was so like, I was like a carnivore. And again, I was like, I don't even like meat that much, but I was in those moments. So what I learned from that was that our body has a wisdom to it far beyond what our ego minds think we know is best. Likewise, I was in the era of like eating 6 meals a day and high protein first thing in the morning. I don't know if you know about those trending of those years and maybe they're still happening in the fitness world. I don't know. But I was at the time not eating a thing before probably 11:30 or 12 because I was deeply rooted in a yoga practice. And so you don't eat for 3 hours before yoga traditionally. And so by the time I would go to yoga class, I would finish around 11. Then I would go have my first meal, which was usually a latte and a healthy kind of, now you would call it like a superfood biscotti, which I would bake for myself. But so I just ignored all the trends and did what my body, I didn't like eating first thing in the morning. I didn't like eating before I ran. I didn't like eating before yoga, even though the popular thinking at the time was like, you should eat 6 meals a day, get up first thing. They're like, have protein before you work out so your muscles can grow. And I just ignored it, which I do with a lot of things, and listened to my body. And now, fast forward, I was sharing this with my friend like 3 or 4 years ago, and she's like a huge fitness guru, and she's like, oh, you're intermittent fasting. And I was like, what? I was like, didn't even know what it was. I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I just do what my body tells me. So my key takeaway at the end of all of it is to do your research, do all your reading, figure out what's hot and trendy, and then throw it all away. Be well informed. Like figure out if Diet Pop is causing cancer. That's important to know. But mostly listen to your body. And if you're really developing that relationship over time, your body will tell you exactly. For example, when I'm in Costa Rica, I crave chips. I don't even really like chips. But every day around like 3 or 4 in the afternoon here, my body wants like a little handful of salt and vinegar chips. And I was like, that's kind of weird and naughty and taboo and bad, right? In quotation marks, according to healthy eating. But I realized again, and I buy, of course, like all the organic kettle chips, healthy, no additives, GMO free, but my body needs more salt down here.
I was actually, as soon as you said chips, I was like, I bet she wants salt.
I want salt. You're sweating all day here.
Yeah.
And the other thing my body has always wanted is a little bit of dark chocolate in the afternoons. And again, that was like a little bit naughty and weird and taboo. I've been doing it for like 10 years. Now all this research coming out about cacao and superfoods and not only the physical elements, the spiritual benefits of it, plant medicine, all this conversation is happening. But I've already been having this little bit of the magnesium in it, all of the things. My body was already asking me for that. So to label things as being cheat days or treats or bad for me adds an element of shame. And I really, if there's nothing else I pass on, it would be to do everybody do your very best. If you're going to eat the chocolate, just eat the chocolate and love the chocolate. If you're going to eat the cake, then eat the cake. You don't need to eat 5 pieces of the cake. And in fact, if you're super present to the eating of the cake or the chocolate, and by that I mean like slow it down, stop talking, turn off the distractions, get off your phone, smell the cake, eat the cake, taste the cake, the chances are that you're probably going to be satiated after probably 4 to 5 bites if you're really like eating good, rich, like really good food. And the taste sensation of it and the sensory sensation of it will be so fulfilling and satisfying that you can just enjoy the pleasure of it. And you will over time 100% self-regulate, because you will notice that over time eating that much sugar at once actually can, like, it kind of hurts your mouth after a while and it kind of feels gross in your throat. And so if you're really, again, the practice of being hyper present and delighting in it is to me the best approach to, I really believe in discipline. I'm very, very, very disciplined, but I also think we need to embrace pleasure and joy. And I think that we can be so hard on ourselves and trying to be so good in quotation marks and perfect all the time that we ultimately end up self-sabotaging, because what I see is that people add on this layer of stress and guilt and shame. Like, I'm so bad for eating the cake. I can't believe I had a handful of fries that my kids had at dinner tonight. Oh my God, I cheated. And what that does is spikes your cortisol levels and your stress hormone, which, as we all know, are the key things that make you cling to fat. So all this being said, listen to your body, slow down, turn off the distractions. And if your body tells you to, make conscious choices. Like I said, I'm not buying like Lay's potato chips that are disgusting and GMO and all that stuff. I'm buying like healthy, organic, clean, GMO-free products that are in my house. And within that container of smart choices, I do listen to what my body is asking for, and I honor it with reverence for the knowing that my body at this point has a lot of wisdom within it to share with me.
Yeah. And I love the story that you take us through, like, you know, going through different changes, you know, being called the fat kid, needing to lose weight, going on the swim team, doing fad diets, you know, getting pregnant, going through pregnancies, and really learning about self-regulation through your experience and noticing how your body sometimes is wiser than we are, and what really happens when we slow down and truly listen. Like, it's just so interesting. And you've given so many examples over and over again about, you know, our body's ability to kind of know when maybe we don't know. And if we slow down and listen, there's so much information there. So Lindsay, with so much of this stuff being said, I feel like we could go down like every path, every single part of that. But I know I want to swing us over a little bit to your current life in Costa Rica and how you tie in like just so much of this, like being present with yourself, being present with your body, some of this, you know, the self-discipline and the pleasure, and just kind of also becoming the best you can be. I know you do this in your personal life, your business life. Can we work some of Costa Rica, Lindsay, into food here somehow?
Yes, absolutely. How I say, like, how you do one thing is how you do everything. So for me, the conversation about food is the conversation about life. And so I had the opportunity to come down here to Costa Rica about 14 years ago on a surf safari vacation with, I had only one kid at the time, but I had a true sense of coming home at that time, and my body and my soul felt so alive, so connected here. And so I started coming back year after year after year, and for many years would come for a month a year with the four kids, and then 2 months a year, and then ultimately about 4 years ago made the move from Toronto. And so many of the principles and practices that exist in this community, it's a blue zone where I live here in Costa Rica, which is a place where, if you don't know about them, people should Google it. It's really fascinating. There are five they've identified in the world, areas where people live to over 100 at a 10 times higher rate than in North America. And some of the principles that allow for that longevity, which also happen to coincide with leading happier lives, you're living longer, happier lives, are the very principles that I have been working with through my coaching practice for the last 17 years, integrating that into my movement and spirituality practices through yoga and many different movement and ancient wisdom practices. So now what I do is basically invite people down here to give them a very powerful transformational experience of implementing so many of these practices and tools that they can then take back into their busy world. I lived in downtown Toronto for 15 years. So it's like, how do you translate some of these practices into a busy, beautiful, abundant life in a different setting, like a city? And so, for example, the stillness, the listening to your body, one of the key things that is very, very common and typical here is, you know, getting up with sunrise, connecting to a time of stillness, whether it's walking or seated meditation or surfing here is a big thing, but basically getting your body moving first thing in the morning, getting into that place of stillness through, again, whether it's seated meditation, connection to nature, gratitude practices. And that allows us to get into that place of stillness so we can listen. And then we leap into whatever the guidance we get from our quiet time is. And so for me, the wisdom is always to move my body early in the morning. So I do have a very committed yoga practice. I do movement, different movement modalities, surfing, but not from a place of self-punishment or I need to look good in a bathing suit. It's entirely about making me feel good so that I can tap into, and there's all this research now about flow states, getting into optimal states, peak performance, as well as peak experience. So not only are you feeling on top of the world, like you're winning at life, but you're also in that state, the most creative, the most productive, having the most big picture thinking, which then allows you, then once you sit down to do the introspective work or the creative work out in the world, you're coming at it from like an infinitely more powerful, more connected, more inspired place. So you can get 10 times as much work done in a much shorter period of time that allows you to then have this exponentially greater impact in the world. So again, it's listening, and the body has such wisdom. And so when we're in Costa Rica, there's a huge emphasis on it's so hot, it's so everything, and it's like you literally have to strip everything away. And we get back in tune, up with the sun, sunrise, the tides are a big influence here in the ocean, the monkeys, the birds, you're so connected into nature, it really allows you to connect back into your own natural rhythms, your own inner voice, your own inner wisdom, which is how we cultivate the ability to, when I say, listen to your body, ask your body how, what it wants to eat, how it wants to move. It extends even to who should I hang around with? Who are my best potential clients? What should I do creatively with my business? Your body will guide you around what feels aligned, what has resonance, what brings you closer to joy or further away from joy. And so when you find yourself in those times of struggle, whether it's around food or movement or business or relationships, it's an opportunity to really take a step back and check in with the wisdom of literally your body. Like, does this feel good to me? And just listen. If you get excited, if you get butterflies, if you feel sick, if you're like, ugh, if you get tightening in your throat, these are all signals that whatever it is you're contemplating may not be in your highest good. So that's how this connection to nature, rewilding literally in Costa Rica, translates into us really rewilding ourselves away from mental constructs, distractions, societal beliefs, or just old toxic habits, and allows us to reconnect back into our inner wisdom, the highest good that our body and our souls will always be guiding us towards.
Wow. I mean, you just talked about so much stuff there. And I mean, I heard everything from moving over there. You noticed you felt alive, and being over there, there's so many different things that have allowed you to reach peak performance, peak experiences, have allowed you to get more done, shorter time, and, you know, create a greater impact and connect more to yourself. And I know that you provide these experiences for other people there as well. Mm-hmm. Holy wow. And so yeah. if we're not in the jungle, mm-hmm. and we are in the busyness, and, you know, we're almost out of time. So I guess just wrapping up, you're able to provide these experiences and tap in and to get into this. What's like a simple thing that we could pull into our daily lives that would help us to get there if we don't have the jungle and we don't have all of that to help us?
That's such a good question. And I am obsessed every minute of my time when people come down here to my Costa Rica experiences. I'm forever saying, and this is how you can use this back in the city. I like to like work myself out of a job. I do not recommend that everyone needs to pack it up and move to Costa Rica. So the most simple thing that I'm most obsessed with right now is I'm like, I use it all the time in my social media and stuff, is just get outside. Mm. And so if I could share one tip for every person, the connection to nature, get outside. I recommend early in the morning to connect to the expansiveness of the fact that we're just a tiny little spark of stardust on this planet. And it really helps to put things in perspective. And you could do, I used to be a runner in Toronto. You could do it anywhere. There's valley systems, there are parks, there are any kind of, even just walking my kids to school in the most concrete jungle area of Toronto you could imagine, I would look for nature, I would look for birds, I would look for leaves changing on trees, I would look up at the clouds. And so just get outside early in the morning with the intention of being present and using nature as a tool to take a few deep breaths, check in with the bigger picture of things. And then from that place of connection, it will calm your nervous system. There's all kinds of research about the power of nature on vitality, well-being, immune systems, mental health, etc. But literally just get outside, try to make a point of, even if you could walk underground or any of that, just get outside, breathe in some fresh air, and make a conscious effort to look for a connection to nature again, whether it's a sunrise or a sunset or a cloud or somebody's even flowers in the garden. That would be my number one thing that I think can profoundly change and enhance your lives in a very simple, simple, quick practice.
Yeah. And I love what you said. It's the getting outside, but it also sounds like the consciousness of like noticing and looking for nature and making it a bit more conscious to connect also. Like if you just get outside, that's good. But it sounds like you've added a second piece to that too.
I think that's the most critical, because being outside with your headphones on, scrolling your phone is not exactly hitting the mark. And right. It's the mindfulness, which is the meditation. It's like just getting radically present and using nature as a point of focus to help you get present. But you can also over time really develop a sensitivity to the energy within nature. And it's like literally like plugging in avatar style to the tree of life. You can feed off of the energy of nature that can fuel you again to even higher levels of experience and impact in the world. So that's sort of the trajectory that is available if you choose it.
Oh, that's so amazing. Thank you. Thank you so much for this. And I think like the beautiful thing about speaking with you and that I saw the first time I spoke with you is you bring this energy everywhere and you show it. Like you're an example of what can happen when it connects, and you're that person. It's like, okay, maybe I don't have faith yet that this could happen for me, but if this person is, you know, I think that's the difference between that faith and belief. I have a belief that this could work for someone else, so I can believe it could work maybe for me too when we don't have faith yet. And you're one of those people I think people can borrow belief from, and we hear you talk about it and we see what you're doing and we see just those, when you just gave that practical example of how we can pull that in even more, not in Costa Rica. So thank you so much for your time and your soul and your spirit and sharing with us about how to integrate these practices, everything you've overcome. And really like the biggest message I took away from today was like, tune into your body. It's so wise.
Yes. Just honor those beautiful bodies that you were given. What a miracle you are. What a miracle it is to be alive. Yes. And thank you so much for having me and for the work you're doing in the world, and to everybody who's listening, for doing this inner work that is truly, truly, as we grow and heal ourselves, we're literally healing the world. So thank you to everybody for listening to these conversations, for having these conversations. And thank you so much for the work you're doing.
Lindsay, is there any last thought that you want to leave people with?
Just to love yourselves, really, really tap into self-compassion and know that you're doing your best wherever you are, one day at a time, and every single breath is an opportunity to start again. So yeah, just keep on keeping on. And you guys, every single one of you is a miracle. So just wishing for you to honor that in yourselves.
Oh, I'm so glad I asked you that question just now. Like that was a great message. Thank you for that. And Lindsay, if people want to know more about your programs, if they want to come visit you in Costa Rica, if they want to just have your energy, where can they follow you? Where can they find you? What's your website?
Oh, thank you so much for asking. My website is aliveandawake.com. That's what I stand for, being alive and awake. And I have an Instagram account, which is Lindsay Alive. Lindsay with AY Alive, and Facebook as well. I do all kinds of live Facebook lives, Instagram lives, and I have some online programs, The Path, that just started and will start again in September, and a retreat coming up in April, every April and November, having these deep dive activation, amazing times in Costa Rica. So aliveandawake.com is my website, and Lindsay Alive on Instagram and Lindsay Sikornik on Facebook. Thank you so much for asking.
Well, thank you so much, Lindsay. And now everybody, you know where to go find her.
Thank you so much for tuning in. This podcast was made because of your questions, so please help me get it out there by leaving a rating and review. Until next time, remember, you've got this, and stay consistent.